Okay, my name is Dave Cole, and I live in T48 West Shaw, and my major is Public Affairs Management, and I'm 19 years old.
Better give you your home address, too, because I want to be able to mail this transcript to you in case, you know, if you've left Michigan State, I want to have a home address.
Okay. It's 12922 Via Katharina, Grand Blanc, Michigan, 48439.
Well, let's begin with just a description of your hometown. If you can just mentally close your eyes and tell me what the town was like, whether it was a rural or urban setting, whether you lived down the street from the grocery store, or whether the baseball diamond was in the school playground was two blocks away. Just as if I were seeing a movie, give me your description of those things.
Okay, well, Grand Blanc is not real big. As a matter of fact, I'd say the Michigan State University population is more than Grand Blanc. But it's up and coming. It's a fairly wealthy community. We're right on the south side of Flint. And I live in a neighborhood which is right behind, like you said, a little shopping mall. And there's a theater. And I'm right in the center of town. I'm 5 minutes away from the high school walking. The high school is spread out right through exactly the center of town. There's the high school, the junior high, the elementary, and the middle school. There's another middle school also. The baseball diamonds and tennis courts and all those things around football fields. There's only one main drag through town, but it's not like if you're driving through like Howell or something, and you see there's just three blocks, and that's the whole city. It's not quite that bad, but there's this one main drag with everything in it.
Can you describe the house you lived in and grew up in?
I've been living in the same house for my whole life. It's a two-story, four-bedroom house. We got two bathrooms, two-car garage, just the basic four-person family house, I would say.
And can you tell me, first of all, what your mother and father do, if they're still working or living, and if you have sisters and what they're doing?
Okay. Well, my father's working at the Genesee Valley Mall, which is right in Flint, at a store called Blackstone's Men's Clothing. My mother's a secretary at a little business downtown Flint. My sister is a senior here at Michigan State and will be graduating in June. This is her fourth year.
What does your father do?
He basically just sells the clothes. And he's also working on the Board of Review for Grand Blanc. He's also a tax assessor.
And your mother's a secretary for?
I changed the name to Jewish Social Services of Flint. I think that's what they changed the name to.
So you're Jewish?
Yes.
And your sister is a major in what field?
Audiology and speech pathology.
Well, what was the ethnic breakdown of Grand Blanc? Was this largely a white Anglo-Saxon community with a smattering of Jews and Hispanics and blacks, or what?
Exactly, yeah. Basically, in my high school, I think there were, by the time I graduated, I think there were around maybe six Jewish kids in the school out of probably 2,500. There was 400, almost 60 in my graduating class. There's a few more blacks coming into the community. But mostly, yeah, just probably white, Anglo-Saxon, middle class.
Did you feel, of course you can probably guess this question's coming, but did you feel as if you were a group of a minority, a member of a minority? And if so, were they reminding you of your religious background, your faith, in a negative way, or what?
The
other people in school, the high school students?
No, most of the kids knew I was Jewish, but they really didn't care. I mean, everywhere you go, there's going to be bigotry and anti-Semitism and what have you, but you know, most of the people that I would do things with and hung out with, you know, liked you for what you were, not what religion you were, or what color you were, just what kind of person you were. And it worked out quite well. I mean, I was friends with everybody in the school, all kinds of different people, all the different social classes, I mean, the jocks, the punkers, and the what have you. And it doesn't bother me. I mean, one of my best friends is black, and I don't care.
Can you talk about the different groups? You mentioned the jocks and the punkers. What other groups were there? And could you talk a little bit about the jocks and the punkers? What was the breakdown socially? What was the caste system in
okay, in Grand Blanc High School, and I think this goes for pretty much most high schools, you have your basic jocks, and most of them are, you know, real wealthy, and they have everything they want. But not all of them, but most of them. And then that with that same crowd is like the cheerleaders in that group. Then you have your...
Hold on a second. If you're talking about jocks, you're talking about football athletes,
all
right?
All the athletes.
Well, why would they necessarily be wealthy? They're just big and strong.
At least in Grand Blanc, that's how it was. Most of them. I didn't say all of them. Most of them, they... even if they weren't big, they played something, whether it be... tennis or, like, I'm small, but I wrestled. In Grand Blanc, there's a lot of stuck up, real snobby, and I associate them with all the jock group. Granted, I was wrestling, but I was friends with some of them, but not, I don't like the real snobby people that are as if you don't wearing the polo or whatever the brand name is that's popular now, then you're not in their little group.
You didn't have the alligator on your shirt?
No, yeah, exactly. If you didn't have that, then you weren't, you know, quote-unquote cool or something. And it kind of makes you upset, but, you know, see people that have to be like that. But anyway, there's those people.
Yeah.
And then there's... the people who got into the punk scene with, you know, the music and the skateboarding and all this and that. And that wasn't too many people, just a small little group. And they didn't do anything. They just hung out by themselves. And there were the burnouts, of course. And they always had their own little hallway. Just like the jocks had their own little section in the hallway where they'd stand in between classes. The stoners had their own other little hallway.
The who? The stoners?
Stoners, the burnouts. And the punker type kids, they had their little section of the hallway. And it was really funny because if you would come into this high school just visiting, you would see hallways with, you know, a few people walking around. And then you'd come to a certain spot and there'd be just 50, 60 people standing around.
Now, where would you normally stand?
It would depend. Usually I'd wander.
So you felt a certain flexibility.
I got along with everybody, so it didn't really matter to me. I mean, there's certain people I didn't like.
Wasn't there pressure on you to stick with one group?
No, because I never got real close, I guess socially, real close socially with any one group. So, I mean, it wasn't surprising to see me, say, go out to a movie or, you know, whatever, Friday night with a couple burnouts. But it didn't mean that I did drugs. And then the next day you'd see me with a couple guys, you know, the big jocks on Saturday night doing something. It wasn't surprising to see that at all. And most people knew that. That's just the way I was. And it never got to be a problem. I was accepted by everybody.
Well, you mentioned that you never really felt exceptionally close to any one group.
Socially.
Or socially.
Yeah, I mean, I had some good friends all over, so. But socially, I wasn't connected. See, I don't like all that either, you know.
Socially, what was going on, though, that you didn't like among certain groups? For example, the jocks, were they all... going to certain dances or country clubs or playing tennis together on Saturday morning? What was happening there that made them unique as opposed to the punkers or the burnouts?
Well, the punkers were just basically rebelling, I think, against social norms. They'd do the hair thing and the clothes. They wear, you know, the out-of-style clothes. Get back in the dad's, you know, old clothes. And they'd do things in class. They'd be loud just to get attention. And I think it was they're just trying to be rebellious. And I was like, if you want to do that, fine. Now the jocks, as I see in Grand Blanc, people are really, really snobby, and it just so happened that a lot, when I say the jocks, I include the girls too, that hang out with the jocks, and it's just, it's terrible. They're so snobby. Wait, I think I'm losing where I'm going.
It's all right. Yes, I've heard of Buick rolling.
Okay, that's in Grand Blanc. Mm-hmm. And it's almost right in my backyard, just right down the street a little bit.
Well, are you telling me that the really rich people in town work for General Motors and belong to exclusive clubs and are very much part of a white Anglo-Saxon heritage?
And it rubs
there
haven't off
been
on
too
the...
many Jews who have made it to the... I don't think any Jews have ever made it to the upper echelons of Ford. I don't know whether you know that or not.
No.
But Henry Ford was quite strongly anti-Semitic. And so it's like an exclusive club up there in the upper echelons of General Motors. And if Grand Blanc, if their society is a spin-off of some of the people working for General Motors, they might be infected with the same... narrow-mindedness.
Yeah, I never really experienced any anti-Semitism to myself, except for just listening in class, and somebody would say something to the extent of, speaking of their grade in the class, they would say, "Oh, I got Jewed out of my grade," but it was nothing really directed to me. Yeah. And but things like that, that really got my goat.
Yeah.
But there was nothing directed to me or my sister or my family or my friends that were Jewish. It was never anything towards me personally, which...
Did your father ever talk about this subject? Did he ever talk? You see, you've defined a rather rigid caste system in Grand Blanc among the breakdown of the school.
Yeah.
Did your father or your mother talk about the different layers of society in Grand Blanc?
No. See, they're both born and raised in Toledo, Ohio, where there's a humongous Jewish community. I mean, granted, we have Flint right next door, but, you know, when I'm in high school, growing up, especially before I'm 16, I don't have a car and or the means to just, whenever I want, get up and go to Flint to meet these other Jewish people and this and that. So it's tough, but no, they never talked about it.
They're not, they're just reform. I mean, do they go...
No, we're conservative.
Conservative.
Yeah.
Do you follow all of the dietary? You don't follow...
Yeah.
You do follow the dietary laws.
Our house is kosher.
Mm-hmm.
My mother keeps it special. My father doesn't. I mean, none of us will eat ham or pork or anything like that.
But do you go to the extreme of having separate sets of dishes?
Yes. Our house is separate sets of dishes. That's mainly my mother's doing. My father he'll eat hamburgers out at McDonald's.
Now, will your mother eat with the family?
Yeah. If, say, we're out somewhere shopping and we want to pick up a bite to eat, we say, okay, let's pull into McDonald's. Where I will get a hamburger and so will my father, my mother will get the fish. She can't get any meat out.
But isn't part of the custom that the women do not eat with the men? Or is that...
No.
That's extreme, isn't it? I guess
I've never heard that.
The Hasidic, maybe the Hasidic Jews follow that.
Possibly.
Too. Yeah.
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. I lived in New York for a long time, and my stepmother is Jewish, so I'm familiar with some of the customs.
Okay.
we don't have to get sidetracked on this. It just interests me personally because I grew up in New York City.
I understand.
Can you give me a general appraisal of what high school meant to you academically, whether it was challenging, for example, whether it prepared you well for college?
Okay. Leading into this, I'll give you a real quick little story. My father's brother and his family, they all live down in Virginia, in that area, and they have two kids, and they're getting up. I think one of them is a sophomore in high school, another one's going to be a freshman next year. And I wrote them a letter just not too long ago, because they wrote to me asking, how's college, how's Michigan State, and this and that. And I wrote back saying, you know, everything's fine, give them the breakdown on my major. But I told the kids, study. The key to high school is study. I mean, have fun, do your sports, go to your dances, do your little parties, join all your little groups, but really put your time in high school, because, I mean, make yourself study, because they don't teach you that. I mean, Grand Blanc is a very, very good academic school. They put out a lot of students to U of M, a lot of students to here, especially here. There's a lot of kids from my graduating class that are here. And they, you know, those are two good schools. They really stress academics. And the funny thing about that is they don't teach you how to study. You know, they tell you, they give you your homework, do it, okay, fine. But once I came up here last year for my first year, I was overwhelmed. I was, wow. But so I basically had to teach myself how to study. And there's a difference just between sitting down and reading something or doing your math and actually knowing how to do it and the right time to do it. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't know.
I know what you're talking about, because I had the same problem in college. I had not learned how to study.
Exactly.
But can you be more specific in terms of techniques that you've actually learned with respect to reading or with respect to doing a math problem or what? Or what have you learned in terms of how to study?
Well,
you said in high school you didn't know how to study. The implication now is that you've learned something about studying. What is the difference? What have you learned here? What new technique?
Well, this is a little thing, but things such as I'd go home from high school, turn on the TV, have a little snack after school, you know, maybe, okay, nothing to do, so I'll read a little bit in my physics book or whatever. And I have the TV on in the background, and I have my sister over here making noise on the telephone, and I'd read. And you think, okay, fine, no problem. But you'd do so much better if you had total silence, and you can concentrate on your reading. It'll stay in your mind better, for me at least. That's something I've learned that I have to do. If I'm going to read, I need quiet. And, I mean, same thing, like if you're reading the newspaper, I'm sure you can read and there's other noises going around in your family, your room or whatever room you're in. And you can still read and you can still concentrate. But when you have to read something important, like whether it be economics or marketing or what have you, for me, I need silence so I can, it helps me remember better.
All right, you come to Michigan State, you're thrown into a room with a roommate at random. All hell breaks loose that first term on the in the residence hall. How in the hell can you study?
I got lucky. There were two juniors on my floor. Great guys. I consider them one of my best friends now, and I've only known them for a year and a half now, almost 2 years. And they sort of took me under their wing. And, you know, I asked him, you know, how do you motivate yourself to study, and how do you do this? And basically, all they said was, if I can push myself to do it now, I know it's going to pay off in the end. And just really simple like that, little thing like that, and I thought about it, and I thought, you know, they're right.
What were the distractions? There you are, on the floor. You're lucky enough to get a couple of good roommates. Now, what's going on in the hallways? Tag team wrestling, drinking? What's happening?
Oh, no, just like music playing. I live on the terrace level.
What hall?
In Shaw, right over here. And so people come in right through my hall all the time. There's the bus zone right there. So people are coming in, going out, going in to eat at Shaw because it's so centrally located. Just people walking, people talking, radios, and our walls are real thin. So I can hear everything. So I'll have to go to the library or go to Bessie, the study hall. A lot of times I study over there. Or there's places throughout the dorm you can study. There's quiet rooms you can go to. You just got to get away. This is during the day. At night, it'll quiet down usually, at least on the weekdays. So you can get your things done in your own room.
Did you find much drinking in Shaw, first term?
Nothing more than I expected. Because I found a lot of people, they'll come to college from real small towns, and they're really surprised at what they see that goes on in college. Fortunately for myself, you know, having my sister 2 years older, I was able to come up and visit. And another advantage for me is I met a lot, I'd probably say even almost half of the men that live on my floor before I was even accepted to Michigan State, because they were brother sister floor, my sister and her floor with the floor I'm living on now. So I met so many of the guys, and that was a big advantage that I had, I think, over the other incoming freshmen last year.
Well, what is it that prevented you from going crazy that first term, as opposed to other freshmen who drink excessively, who party all the time, their grade point average drops, they just go a little bit bonkers, and apparently you didn't. Why?
Well, drinking is really no big deal to me. At home, if I wanted a beer, or if I want a beer or whatever, you know, my father will go out and buy one for me, you know. They'd say, if you're going to drink, drink at home. They don't have, I mean, my parents don't drink hardly at all. That's good English. They don't, they do not drink very much. You know, the holidays, they'll have a glass of wine. That's it. I think if my dad might buy a six-pack of beer, and it'll probably last 7-8 months. It's no big deal to him. And I think that's just the way it's rubbed off on me. It's no big deal to me to have a drink. If I want one, fine. But otherwise, no pressure.
So you did not have a strict upbringing?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I wasn't 12 years old when they said, hey, well, if you want a beer, go ahead. You know, I'm 18, 19 years old. And they realize that I can handle these things, you know, I'm growing up. Yeah, I always had to be home at a fairly early time on nights, school nights especially, and weekends even. I had a fairly early curfew, which I know my mother and myself had many an arguments about. But that's a whole other story.
Was the mother was she the disciplinarian in the family?
Mostly because Dad was always away at work or this or that. And when he was at work, and he'd work like 11-hour days, he'd be tired. So he'd come home and be in bed, then I'd come home afterwards and I wouldn't see him. I'd sometimes go for days without seeing my father. It was kind of weird. Because we're both living in the same place, but we're just going in and out at the wrong times. But yeah, I'd say Mom was pretty much the one who enforced all the little rules and said yes or said no to this or that, whichever.
Do you have serious conversations with your father about anything or particular subjects?
If I need to. I mean, I My parents have always made it clear since day one, ever since I can remember, that if I ever have any problems, I don't need to discuss anything, they're always there for me. Granted, they might be upset with something I did, but if I'm in trouble, they're there. I mean, they'll back me up. And it's good to know. I mean, fortunately, I haven't had to go to that extreme and say, you know, I've done something really wrong and I need your help. But at least I know that they're there for me. And it makes you feel good. You know, they makes you know that they love you. So.
Do you have any freshman year tales to tell of that are somewhat humorous, things that happen in the residence hall that with roommates, anything from water fights to short chi in the bed of the RA, I don't, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Okay, I'll try to keep this fairly clean.
No, Mac, hey, listen, this is something which you want to pick up and be able to read as if it were an accurate report. Okay. 10 years from now, so tell it like it is. It's nothing I haven't heard before.
All right.
You're the 31st person I've interviewed. Remember that.
Okay.
I've heard a lot of bizarre stories.
Okay, this has to deal with my present roommate. And he went to high school with me. And I won't mention his name.
It's fine.
We've been friends for a while. But at this time last year, he wasn't living with me, but just down the hall and around the corner. And one night, he got really, really drunk. And that's nothing uncommon for this guy. And as he was going to bed, he's taking off his clothes, of course, and they have the loft in the room, just regular H loft. And
what loft? H loft?
Yeah, there's the beds are in each, like you walk through the front of the, and there's a bed on the left-hand side and the bed on the right-hand side. And his roommate was already in bed. And they had this little table in the middle of the room. And it looked just like a giant spool. They're used for the cables, to wrap the cables, big wire cables around. Okay, and that was their little table. And so, I think the other story behind this was all his underwear was dirty. So he wasn't wearing any underwear with his jeans or whatever he was wearing. And so when he went to bed, he took his clothes off. And so he was naked now. And the way he gets up in the bed was he'd stand on the table and hold on to the wood of the loft, one on each side, part of his roommate's bed and his bed. And he'd push himself up and just kind of roll onto his bed. Okay, so he did that, and he's up there, and middle of the night sometime, he falls out of bed. He rolled right out, and he lands kind of like on the edge of the table, and he scrapes his rear all up, and I remember his roommate was just looking, saying he's looking down, he heard a big thud, he's like, what happened? And all he heard was a couple moans, and he's like, I'm okay. So this my friend's roommate, who's still in bed, thinks nothing about it and just rolls back over and goes to sleep. Well, my friend, who's on the floor at this time, after he finally manages to wake up and stand up and this and that, gather his thoughts, he stands up and kind of goes over to the corner of the room, and he puts his arms up like by his forehead, and he leans against the loft, which is right about forehead level. And he's just, I don't know what he was doing, and proceeds to go to the bathroom. All over his roommate's stereo, and the carpet, and I can't remember what else he had in the corner. I think they had a chair, Lazy Boy chair. And this roommate was still in bed. All of a sudden, he starts to hear him.
He's,
you know,
pissing all
yeah,
over.
Yeah, he's taking a leak all over the room, right? And so he looks down out of the loft, and he's like, what are you doing? And this kind of scared the roommate, and he's jerking all around. And the guy up in the bed is kind of like, oh my god, oh my god. So he's trying to think of what he should do. But my friend, when he's drinking a lot, sometimes he can get kind of wild. So he didn't want to do anything to get this guy upset and have him start trashing room. So he just laid up in bed. And so at this point, when I almost said his name, when the man on the floor who's been taking a leak turns around, he's facing the opposite way of what he normally does. So he's ready to get back up in the loft. And so as he does this, he reaches up and pulls himself up and goes into bed. But since he's turned around, he goes in the wrong bed. So now he's in bed with his roommate. And remember, he's naked and his butt's bleeding and he just went to the bathroom all over the floor. And this guy says, "What are you doing?" And our drunk little friend replies, "Just shut up and move over." So that was a big joke on the floor. Everybody, you know, had their little 2 cents worth of that for probably a couple months. And that went on twice. He's like, "What? What are you doing?" So I said, "Shut up and move over." So the sober roommate finally gets up and goes down, takes the bed sheet off of the other guy's bed and cleans up the floor a little bit where he had been doing his little thing, and proceeds to sleep on the couch for the night. But that was the story.
Now, you were in the room, or?
No, but I had heard the story from the guy who was sober up in bed.
Now, if that happened in your room, how would you react?
I'd be probably pretty upset that he went to the bathroom in the room, but
God, I would go through the ceiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a fight right then and there. I mean, I just can't imagine that.
Well, him climbing into my bed, I know it. I wouldn't think anything about it. I mean, I'd say, well,
yeah,
he's drunk.
You're urinating all over your stereo.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want to punch the guy out? So here you come from this essentially rather calm and controlled background from Grand Blanc, or at least living at home, and suddenly you're in this residence hall where people are pulling off these bizarre series of stunts. That's a change, isn't it? How were you really reacting to this? Were you just sort of laughing, or were you asking, "My God, maybe I'm next. I'm going to be involved in one of these incidents myself next week."
Well, knowing this person and growing up with him, I wasn't surprised that it was him that did this. You hear stories like, you know, your first month at school from the older people. They are telling stories about what happened last year. They're all reminiscing and laughing. So you hear things. So as things happen for the first time for you, they're a little bit less shocking, as if you had never heard about it before. Whether it be somebody throwing up and passing out in the bushes, or, you know, whatever it may be. I don't know. I think you just gotta take the punches as they come and realize that this stuff's gonna happen, but, you know, your life's gotta go on. So fine. Yeah, I was pretty much laughing. As far as being concerned about what happened to me, I mean, of course, everybody has their own little stories about themselves that have happened. I'm lucky I haven't been too bad, you know. You just gotta try and keep in control of yourself. Because, you know, if you don't keep an eye on yourself and keep in control, then it's gonna happen to you. And hopefully, with this watchful eye, it won't happen too often.
Talk a little bit about your how you've done academically, your grade point average in high school, whether that dropped or went up when you first came to college, your selection of a major, your desire to pick one major as opposed to another.
Okay.
Grades and major.
Well, in high school, that really was no challenge, and I put absolutely no effort into it, and I think I came out with like a 3-2 or something like that. Yeah, I put absolutely no, pretty much no effort into high school.
Let me insert one quick question here. Every person I've talked with exception of one, has said that high school was not a challenge. Now, are the high schools so bad?
No, I mean, compared to here, I think high school is like elementary school. Because you have so much time to do very little work. You know, the teachers are so nice. It's more comforting. High school should be. It should be like that. But coming to a university like this, I'm not saying I wasn't prepared in the subject matter with the things that I studied and that type of deal. But the amount of time, I mean, we had 10 weeks and we probably studied, I don't know, 8 chapters or something, you know, for each marking period. But here, in 10 weeks, you know, I'm doing one of my econ classes last term. For 10 weeks, I covered, I don't know how many chapters, I think 17 or 18 chapters. I had over 100 pages of notes. And I was like, wow. You know, so things like that, comparing it back to high school, makes high school really, really easy.
So did your grade point average drop when you came to Michigan State?
Yeah, a little bit. I had 3 points my first term, and it's gone down a little bit since. I'm working on it to get it back up. It's still right around 2.8, but see, that's still not reflective of my work. But I had one real bad term where I had like a 2.3, and another one not so hot where I had like a 2.5.
What's 2.4. Passing, 2.0?
Or 1.5? I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe it's. I'm not. 2 points like a. It's like a C or a C minus, I think.
And your major is
public affairs management. And I just declared that last term. I had been no prep for the longest time, and then I thought about, well, I'd like to possibly go into finance. And I thought, yeah, okay. But I thought, you know, with all the classes I'm going to have to take, and with my, I'm not real good at the maths and those things. So I figured, well, I'm going to have a tough time getting into business school, probably. So that's how I changed to public affairs. Plus, I love working with people. I love to speak. I could see myself being some kind of an economic analyst or something to that nature. So I'm happy with my major now, and I think my grades will probably shoot up a little bit over these next couple terms.
What's your opinion of the professors here, their quality?
It's really, really varied. Most of the professors I've had are pretty well, pretty good. They know their stuff. That's for sure. They know the subject matter. However, there's so many different teaching styles. It's incredible. I mentioned my econ class that I had last term, with all those chapters. That class was 4 days a week, for 50 minutes a day. And I believe the minimum amount of notes I took was probably 3 pages, and average probably 4.5, 5, for 50 minutes. That's kind of a lot, but compare that to my econ class this term, which I have 2 days a week, and that's 1 hour and 40 minutes each class. And so far in these first 3 classes, I think I've taken like a page and a half of notes each time. That's an hour. I mean, it just depends how they want to teach. I mean, this guy I have now uses more examples. He really wants you to understand the stuff. Where the other guy just kind of, he mentioned it and say, yeah, okay, fine. And he just keep on going. Like, he wanted to get as much material in as he could. Where this other guy, it's in a sense more like high school, where he wants you to understand and he wants you to do well. And, you know, it kind of makes you feel good. That's one example. I mean, I've had different psychology professors where these guys will give you really vivid descriptive case studies, and other guys will just kind of mention, well, it's kind of this is kind of like this, and then go on. And he does. It just depends. But pretty much in all, I'd say they know their material. It's just how they present it to the class.
Now, how about some of, have you had classes where there you have not had a professor present where you were just looking at a monitor?
I have one this term, and
Can you talk about that a little? Whether you like it?
I don't really like it. I was hoping that there's like three sections of the class, and I was hoping that Fridays, since I don't, it's a 1:50 class, and my first class on Friday is 12:30 or 12:40, and I was hoping that I could make it to the 11:30 section, which was I thought was the live section, and that those were taped every day. But as I find out now that that's TV2. These are all from like last year, or from last term, or whenever he did this. So everything's on TV, and I don't know. It's not bad, but it does. You don't have that. I can't ask him any questions unless I go to his office hours. If you put something up on the overhead. And it comes on the TV screen. I mean, I've got to really hurry. Many times already, I've been trying to copy things down, and the guy who is doing the camera, takes it off and goes focuses back on the professor, and I still have like a sentence or half a sentence to go, and that leaves me blank, and I can't ask, a question, what was that, or can you put that back up?
Can you
Whereas,
check the tape out again?
yeah, I mean, I can go to the library and do that. Which is no big deal because I spent a lot of time there anyway. But it's just little things like that, I wouldn't have to take that time out at the library to do that if, say, I were live. And he could keep on talking all he wants, or I could just look up at the monitor and write those next couple words down the sentence. But it's not a bad idea. I mean, he can cover many things. For example, I think he's going to go to Grand Rapids for some kind of. We're going to look at the sewers. It's a fisheries and wildlife class, which I need for my major. And I guess he's going to go look at the sewer systems or something like that later on in the term, where like a field trip, and he can do that for all these sections through TV class, whereas he couldn't do that, but. By taking us all with them on a bus. So there's advantages that way, and there's also disadvantages from our point of view too, but I think they pretty much equal out. I don't know, this is my first class like that, so we'll wait and see.
One of the questions I had in here was related to the whether or not students, current students, felt that the label of belonging to the me generation was justified. Now, do you have any perspective on whether students of this present day feel that do you feel that they are more materialistic, that they are more less idealistic, less concerned with the world, with the plight of the third world countries and so forth, than students were in previous generations? Or what's going on here? Do you have any, have you, do you, is that a point that's even discussed with you or your friends, or?
Well, I'd say to some extent, yes, especially the people I'm familiar with, such as these Grambling people. I mean, I think the more snobby you are, to be honest, the less you really care. I mean, I've seen a lot of people who are just totally materialistic. Everything, they have to have all the new little things and all the brand names and this and that, and everything, all these brand names and devices they have, it just means the world to them. And I think, you just need somebody to love you, But,
How
yeah.
about you? Don't you want the latest stereo and the
Oh, I'd
Corvette?
love to, but you know, I still have my $70 stereo in the room, you know.
And no one's urinated on it.
No.
I'm
I'm lucky. It's more underneath my bed. I mean, I'd love to have these things if I could, but, you know, I'm trying to pay for my own tuition. I mean, my parents are happy to help, but I thought that'd be kind of neat if I could say when I was finished with school that I paid for my own college. I mean, I worked very hard my whole time in high school. And
what did you do?
I summer jobs. I was bus boy. I pizza things. Like golf course. I mean, I was working 2 and 3 jobs a summer, every summer, and usually a job during the school year.
How much would you earn in a summer? And did you save that?
Usually saved almost all mine. Put it this way, at the end of this term, this is be the end of my sophomore year. In June, I can say I paid for my first 2 years of college. And
through work that you did in high school?
Yeah. And then I'm gonna have to get mom and dad to help, because I'm gonna be low on funds.
How about your sister?
She worked through high school too, but she just worked the one job. She worked at the library. She's done that since, I think, the middle of her freshman year. And she worked just about to the end of her senior year there. So
freshman year of high school?
To the senior year of high school, yep.
Has she worked at Michigan State?
Yeah, she's a student supervisor in the Shaw cafeteria. She also lives there. It's her fourth year there. But she's been doing that since beginning of her sophomore year. She's been a supervisor since beginning of the sophomore year.
Have you worked on campus too?
Yeah, I worked in the CAF for a while.
What, washing dishes or?
Just the way they have you do all kinds of different things. Someday you'll serve, someday you'll sit outside and check people's tickets, and someday you'll go around wiping the tables off. Just depends, but yeah, basically. I worked there for a little while. I kind of had a problem with the management, so kind of split up, but that's a whole other issue also.
Do you feel that most students are working a little bit or not? Do you have any idea what the percentages are?
I really don't know, but I'd say it's working on campus or just working?
Just helping themselves through college by working as part-time jobs.
I'd say probably most of them. However, I do know, for example, there's like a guy on my floor who has a really good job for the summers, and he works really, really hard, and so he can sit throughout the school year. He doesn't have to do a thing. He says he makes really, really good money throughout the summer. Those 3 months, he just constant hours, puts in almost 60 hours a week every week, and.
It's a lot of hours.
He works up at like the city hall down near Ann Arbor, something like that. I'm not sure exactly what he does, but and he's set. He doesn't have to work at all during the school year.
I'm just going to look at a few of these questions.
Okay.
Well, where do you hope to be in 10 years? If you could look into the future, Dave Cole lives in... He's not married, he has kids, he doesn't have kids. He has a certain salary, certain prestige in the community. If you went going down a list like that, where do you see yourself in 10 years?
10 years. I'd like to be... Well, I think the new... An up-and-coming little place to be is New Mexico. I think that's going to be the new Arizona within the next 20 years. My own forecast. I haven't heard it from other people, but I see it happening. So as of now, I plan on moving out there. I can see myself being married and having my 2.5 children or whatever you have. I'd like to work with my degree in public affairs management. I can either like work for the government, being some kind of a PR work, or an analyst of some sort, an economic analysis, or I can work for a company. I'd probably prefer to be with a firm of some sort, and maybe even worth a little bit of advertising, with the tied in with the PR. But if I had to, you know, I could work with the government. I like to, of course everybody wants to be wealthy. I mean, I don't want to say that I want to be poor, but, you know, as long as I'm comfortable, I'll be happy with that. As long as I can give my wife and my kids and myself what they want or what they need, then I'll be happy with that. And give back to my parents everything that they've been able to give to me over the years. I think that would make me real happy. If I could get them somewhere to live, you know, when they're older, maybe wherever, Florida or something, I think that'd be really nice. Get them out of Michigan. Because the two places they've lived their entire lives is Toledo and Grambling, Michigan. And I think they need a little change.
So you really have a pretty fond memory of your parents.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've argued many times. I mean, I've got a real bad temper. And I can be a real asshole sometimes. I know I can, but my parents have stuck through it, you know. And they've been there for me when I needed them. And after all, I mean, they are my parents. And I got a lot of respect for them. So, yeah, I'd say I got a pretty fine memory of them.
You throw things around?
So
you had a real bad temper.
Not usually. But, I mean, if I'm really, really steamed at something, I start fidgeting around, I want to go crazy. Like if I'm in my room, and I want to hit something, then I'll think, what can I hit that won't hurt my hand? You know, I still have that little thing in the back of my mind saying, no, watch it. Or if I want to kick someone, say, no, don't break anything that's not yours. I always, so I don't know, I have a bad temper, but I can usually control it to a certain extent. It's kind of weird. But when I do explode, it's not a real good scene.
Never is.
No.
When anybody explodes.
That's true.
And most people lose their tempers.
It's not exactly a... Let me ask, is there some subject related to college life that you feel particularly articulate about that you would like to have on tape? Something that 10 years from now you would look back, you would read it, and then you would reflect on what you were reading and say something to the effect, well, I'm glad I have that memory, or I'm glad I had that thought or philosophy or attitude or... Do you know what I'm asking?
I think so. Stop me if I start going off, but a couple little things. There's a big riffraff about living on campus or off campus. And this is my second year living in the dorms. And since I wasn't sure, I'm still not real positive what I'm going to be doing next year, I didn't go off campus, and I'll probably be living in the dorms when I return. I would suggest to anybody, I mean, at State you have to live in the dorm your freshman year. But I'd even suggest it a second year, because you meet so many people. And I think that's a real big key in life, is the more people you meet, the better chance you have for little things. Say 10 years down the road, that guy is going to be your boss. And he's like, wow, hey, didn't you used to live in Shaw Hall at Michigan State? Yeah. You know, just little things. I found that helps out a lot. Meet a lot of people, get involved. I'd say at least live in the dorms, like I said, at least 2 years. And then go ahead and move off campus. It's time. I know I'm ready to move off campus now. But dorms won't hurt me another year. They're okay. get involved with activities, whether it be sports or any kind of clubs that they offer here. I know I play the intramural sports, and I have the best time of my life. This past year, my floor team, we won the football championship for the dorm. We won the hockey championship for the dorm.
Floor hockey?
Yep. We're the only dorm, I think, that does it, too.
Has floor hockey?
Yeah. It's just fantastic. It's also a way to get out your aggressiveness, especially winter term, because everybody's packed inside. It's cold out. Nobody wants to go out and do anything. Where you see fall and spring terms, people out there playing frisbee, and baseball all the time, constantly. Whereas in winter term, everybody's packed in, and you start getting on each other's nerves, and all these arguments start coming about. And it's true. I don't know if you can relate to this or not, but it's definitely true. It's at least in Shaw, people start getting real fidgety, and they start getting each other's nerves. And this hockey was great. It was a release. It was an out. You could just go out there and let it all go. Although it was supposed to be non-contact, but I mean, still, you're running around, you're getting it out, you're going crazy, and it was good. It felt good. So whether it be sports or whatever there is that the university offers, I'd say get involved and do things. Don't just sit there and watch TV, during your free time. If you have to, just go knock on people's doors and say, hi, I'm Joe Smith. I live down there. Nice to meet you. And meet people. Do things. Get out around. Use the facilities that the university offers, whether it be the IM buildings or the RHA films, which is the Residence Hall Association. They put on free films, which are pretty much new productions. I guess I'm starting to ramble. But just get involved, I think, is the two big words.
So you feel that you have certainly been involved to date.
Yeah, and I feel pretty good about it.
Are you afraid of moving off campus? You might get out of the mainstream? Is that what you're saying?
So I think that could happen to a lot of people. Myself, since I love it, I like this so much. Even if I would move, I think I'd still be involved. Like, for example, these RHA films, if you're an off-campus student, I think it costs you, $2, whereas it's free if you live in the dorms. But even still, I mean, these are top-rate movies that have been out for, I think as little as maybe a month and a half, 2 months, and they have them here. And you're, for $2, instead of a theater for, $5 or $6, just those kind of things that the university offers, they're great. I mean, you don't have to go every week or, but they're there. But go out and use them. That's why they're there. They're for us to enjoy. And I'm sure I would go to them even if I lived off campus.
Let me ask you this. There's the world of college, and then there's the cold, cruel commercial world out there, which you will have to adjust to when you graduate, and you still have a couple of years left. But do you wish that you had more contact with that world out there? There are some college programs which have where you work part-time and then you return to school and work, like GMI does that in Flint, for example.
Right.
You're accumulating all of this hoard of knowledge. Don't you stop and ask, for what? Am I really going to be able to apply this?
Yeah, and I think the answer to that is internship or something. If you're not in a field, like electronics, I think, is one field that you go to school for 2 terms or 3 terms, and you work out in the real world for 2 or 3 terms. And you just go back and forth.
At Michigan State?
Yeah.
You do this?
Yeah, there's a guy on my floor who just, maybe it's 2 terms you go, because he's out of here this term. He's out to work, and he's a little electrician, maybe? He wants to be an electrician. Something like that. And that's not a bad idea. I mean, he's getting experience. He's learning on the job. And it's not bad. There's a couple guys I know who just finished internships with GE, and they said it was like 6 of the best months of their lives. They learned so much. They're both MLM majors. And I think that it is key. Not only are you earning money, you're learning how the real world works, how these companies go through and produce. Like, one guy was in purchasing, and basically what his job was, at least to start off, was he'd call up this supplier and he'd say, hey, we ordered these many nuts and bolts or whatever it was they ordered. Where are they? You know, so he had little authority. He could, like, come on, we ordered them. Where are they? We'd yell at these people, so to speak. And he said it's unbelievable how much you can learn from working in a company like this. And he said he probably will never go back to GE. He didn't really care for it. But the things he learned, the little tiny things, just will stick with him forever. So whether he's working for this company or that company, it doesn't matter.
Do you, just jumping quickly to another subject, did you have other talents in high school, or were you ever interested in acting, any of the arts, or writing, or something related to the humanities, or has it been strictly a business orientation?
Well, I like business, but my better subjects, yeah, I was in a school play in, I think, 10th grade it was. I've always been better at, like, foreign language and English and those type of things than I was math and science. Science in high school wasn't too hard, but I never really cared for it. And it reflected in my grades that I got in my net sci classes here. But Spanish, no problem. English, no problem. Writing, I like to write. I was the editor of my school newspaper, or the editorial editor, I should say. But I did a lot of work. I almost did it by myself, the whole paper. I guess I wouldn't want to teach, I don't think, unless it was something on the side. But I don't think I'd want to teach as my main form of income. But definitely, as you're saying, those type of subjects are my...
Dave Cole's final statement, which hopefully will mean something when he reads it 10 years down the pike.
This is a quote that I read somewhere, and I'm not real sure who wrote it, but I think in essence this kind of ties up everything that I've said, and that is, quote, it's not the pot of gold, but the rainbow itself, end quote.
It's not the reaching the goal, it's the journey.
Yeah.
Is that part of the message?
Yeah, I think so. That's part of it. I mean, it's just, yeah, okay, you want to be rich, you want to be famous, you got to get a good education and do all this stuff. Okay, so say you reach it, but if you're not happy, you reach your goal, you're not happy. You had terrible times all the way through college. You had 3 marriages and 3 divorces, and, you know, your kids hate you. I mean, what's it worth? It's worth absolutely nothing.
If you haven't enjoyed the process of living, the experience itself.
I mean, yeah, there's a spectrum. There's so many analogies. There's the spectrum of colors in the rainbow. Enjoy the wide spectrum of activities throughout your life. I mean, or anything like that. I don't know. That's off the top of my head. But I don't. When I read that, it just kind of stuck with me. And I've never used it before. It kind of comes together now, I think.
Well, I guess that about wraps it up.